A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to the 905 podcast. My name is Roland Tanner.
I am Joel McLeod.
And we're doing a 905 roundup this week with a brace of stories from around the 905 and to a certain extent from further afield. But stay listening. I feel a rant coming on. I'm gonna, you know, judging by our sort of pre-recording meeting, I was just screaming at the microphone a few seconds ago. if you want to hear me lose my shit, stay tuned to the end. But you may also hear me losing my shit in the first part of this episode, which is coming back to that issue of we in our episode last week the week before pretty much put our flags, put our colours to the mast, if you like, on the issue of anti-Semitism in the NDP. We really tried to sort of stay out of the issue of what's actually happening in Israel, but no one else is staying out of it. We're being kind of dragged into it, whether we want it or not. So, Joel, Niagara Regional Council, obviously somewhere where, you know, we really need to discuss what's happening in Palestine and Israel. There was a vote there this week. Why?
well, CH is reporting that at Niagara Regional Council, there was a proposal put forward on the agenda to basically call for a ceasefire in the Gaza Strip that the Niagara Regional Council would vote on and presumably endorse. Why? Now, thankfully, this was shut down by St. Catharines Mayor Pat Sisko for, and his rationale was basically the same as ours, is this is just divisive. It does not, it has no bearing on the affairs of Niagara Regional Council. It is beyond their purview, beyond their scope of jurisdiction. Why would they wade into this only to divide Niagara region constituents, essentially? And of course he was met with boos and hisses and all this stuff, and it's just, I know, kudos to him for doing the right thing. You know, politics aside, like, this is just not the purview of Niagara Regional Council. They have no jurisdiction. At no point is Hamas or Benjamin Netanyahu going to say, oh my gosh, what did Niagara Regional Council say? Oh, you know, this completely changes our tactics, our beliefs, our philosophy in the region. And this is something that there's a reason why we wanted to stay out of this for as long as possible. That who gives a crap what two schlubs in the 905 or a municipal council in the 905 or really the provincial legislature of Ontario has to say on this matter? We are not going to impact or affect what these two parties in the Middle East are going to do about it. It is shameless politicking by the left. Let's be honest here. We try to stay as neutral and down the road, middle of the road as possible. And, you know, this is the left trying to hijack our local government, our provincial governments, for reasons that are their own self-serving, but they do not serve. It takes away from the vital needs of what regional council needs to vote on and take action on and direct funds and resources towards. This isn't it.
Yeah. I mean, this is from the playbook of pathetic left-wing activism that's been around for my life. Now, I'm slagging off the left here. I always considered myself a member of the left. And
me too.
You know,
me
the
too.
NDP, in all honesty, through my whole life, the NDP are the kind of party who should be wanting and expecting someone like me to vote for them and support them every day and twice on Sundays. But my God, they're fucking morons at the moment, and they are so divided on, you know, there's no such thing as an NDP party. There are two NDP parties. There is the hard left of radical socialist activists who are don't really care about mainstream politics at all. They're entirely interested in ideological battles, such as colonialism, wherever they believe that they see it. Gender politics, whatever issue, you know, it's like, it's not putting bread and butter on people's tables. It's not really left-wing politics in a traditional sense. It's posturing. This kind of stuff is just the worst kind of posturing. You know, you just imagine the government of Israel quaking in its boots at a vote from Niagara Regional Council, you know. But, you know, this used to happen back in the days of apartheid, and, you know, and in much more, much less ambiguous circumstances, and people would say, well, let's have a vote and have a, you know, condemn apartheid in Hackney Council. Well, yeah, great. I mean, it's a statement, whatever. Yes, we're all against apartheid. What did it actually do to end apartheid? Bugger all, really. Again, it was pathetic posturing a lot of the time. And in this case, you know, the one issue that I really get passionate about is bad history. And there's so much ignorant, terrible kind of history going on here in this issue of people. You know, sure, you're seeing shells rain down on Gaza from a much stronger, more powerful government, and you're thinking this is appalling. And God, yeah, stuff that's been happening in Palestine and Israel over the last 50 years is appalling. The only thing that's more appalling is what had happened immediately prior to the creation of that state of Israel in the atrocities of the Nazi death camps, you know. But that's part of the history that people seem to be forgetting. And I read today, well, in the context of that thing, there's some NDP idiot, I can't remember which one it was, I think actually a federal candidate, someone like that, talking about basically the need to just extinguish Israel entirely. And you know, whatever you think about the creation of Israel, where it came from, why it came into being. And I suspect these people know nothing about it, frankly. You know, we had an NDP candidate who's now an elected member of a school board, if I remember rightly, who didn't know what Auschwitz was just a few years ago. I mean, this is where this kind of bullshit comes from. That someone, an adult, a grown adult with an education running for a major political party doesn't know what Auschwitz is. What the fuck?
Well, let's go on about you bring up the NDP. The other aspect of this story that we want to chime in on was Sarah Jama, the former NDP MPP for Hamilton Center, still has a lot of support in the NDP, at least the federal MPP, NDP. So many P's in there. I'm sorry, folks. there's a letter from the Guelph NDP federal candidate, and her writing association, Janice Folk Dawson is the name, who wrote to Merritt Stiles, the leader of the provincial NDP, saying that Sarah Jama should be reinstated to caucus and that she should be a member, and that her ouster was a symbol of white fragility and whatnot. And this is...
Yeah, just tell me, you go first and then I'll chip in.
Hey, it's not white fragility. Merritt Stiles, I thought, let that nonsense go on far too long, in my opinion. So when she finally did stand up and said, no, this isn't what our political party stands for, she did the right thing. And when Sarah Jama didn't fall in line, you oust her. That's what a leader does. You toe the party line or you don't. If you don't, see you later. It's clear to me, we've had this discussion on this podcast before. We had it with when we had Joey Coleman on to talk about this ouster, and the fact that you're right. There's two size of the NDP. You have the practical union organization side, the ones who are on the ground actually getting in the mud, organizing and demonstrating and doing the actual legislative framework for their agenda. You have those side, the practical side. Then you have that social justice side that is very much all rainbows and unicorns, and wouldn't it be great if every grievance could be solved with a protest and whatnot. And that's kind of those two sides are I think irreconcilable, and it's why the NDP constantly fails to get things done in this province and in this country, why they constantly fail to rise to the occasion. Here's a perfect example. Why is the provincial NDP member of the Ontario legislature chiming in on this? What is she hoping to accomplish legislatively in Toronto? Yes, I know we all have our personal opinions. We all have our personal beliefs and thought processes on this. And you have a right to express it. True. However, practically, what is she hoping to do here? What is she hoping to accomplish in the Ontario legislature? Say everything she wants to get done gets done. She's able to have the Ontario legislature condemn Israel and declare that Palestine should be free and all this nonsense that she's advocating at the moment. Say she actually gets this put through the Ontario legislature, it will accomplish zero for the people in Gaza or in Israel. But other than she gets to score some political points from her cushy seat in Hamilton Center, I don't get the point. So kudos to Mara Stiles for taking the right role as leader and eventually booting her from caucus. But it tells me that the NDP, federally and provincially, have a long way to go to reconcile this side. Like, you know, this notion of, oh, we're going to pass all this, we're going to let everybody know what our thoughts are, and the idea of white fragility. No, it's a matter of Mara Stiles has an agenda to get through in the legislature. She wants to oppose Doug Ford, as her job as the leader of the opposition. You cannot have somebody like Sarah Jarman says, well, I want to derail it on an issue that has nothing to do with the Ontario legislature.
And this is what the left does. The left rips itself apart in religious wars. And when I say religious wars here, I mean that's a metaphor on issues and causes that they will not compromise on. And yeah, exactly. Ideological purity. And it happens always. This is why, you know, in the country that I grew up in, the Labour Party has basically only had one period in government since 1979, when it turned itself briefly and in other ways disastrously. But anyway, at least they were in government, I suppose, into a kind of right-wing liberal party in a Canadian context. More to the right. Than certainly the government of, say, Kathleen Wynne was. But then they return to their normal situation, which is tearing themselves apart with Jeremy Corbyn actually anti-Semitism and debates over Palestine and not actually, you know, sorting out the business of trying to form a government. It's the same damn thing with the NDP. It's how the Conservatives always win, because the left rips itself apart. So it's incredibly frustrating from my perspective, from that point of view. It's also incredibly frustrating when you see people talking about white fragility and naming that phrase white fragility at Jewish people, descendants of people who came out, who survived the Holocaust or managed to avoid the Holocaust, the few that did, out of the millions that were murdered, and throwing words like white fragility at them because Jews are just white colonialists, right? They're not different from a British redcoat marching into fucking Sudbury. How offensive is that? How offensive is that to associate the descendants of the Holocaust with just some white colonial oppressor? It's bullshit. And when you're talking about, you know, that phrase, you know, Palestine shall be free from the river to the sea, what does that mean? Let's deconstruct what that phrase means. It means that Israel will be removed from the face of the earth. And where will those Jews go, do you think? Back to the countries they came to, back to Germany or Poland, or Eastern Europe, or Russia, are back to those places that they escaped from because they were being murdered in the millions, either by Stalin or by Hitler or by any other of other countries. Give me a break. You know, Israel came into existence in circumstances which I will admit, are problematic in many ways. And basically, a colonial power gifted a piece of land to a people. At least they do have ties to that land. That's where they're from originally.
But here's the thing that, you know, what I said before we hit record was that that phrase from the river to the sea is talking about the elimination of a people, the Israeli people. The argument that being made to support that it's, you know, this colonial mindset and whatnot. Here's the problem with that is those exact same arguments can be used here in Canada.
Yeah.
Or any person who's living here in Canada can be said, no, we have to leave because we're all colonial mindset. Are there problems with colonialism? Absolutely. Was it harmful? Absolutely. The problem isn't to say, well, let's erase what happened in the past, move forward, because I don't have anywhere to go. You know, I can't go back to, here's a question. Where do I go? Do I go to Scotland, do I go to Ireland, or do I go to Germany? Which part of my ancestry do I get to go back to? It's not that clear cut. And that's why, like, we're getting way off the mark here, but like, there are second and third generation Israelis.
I don't think we are. I think we need to talk about this because no one is. Everybody's talking about this as if Israel bombing Gaza is something that happened this week, and that's just because the Israelis are assholes that they're doing it. No, it comes. It's appalling. And my heart weeps for the people of Gaza who've just suffered so much for decades, but not at the hands of Israel. Yes, I mean, the bloody murder that goes on is appalling. You know.
Well, for the record, I think I want Benjamin Netanyahu turfed out of office, but it's...
Sure, the guy's a monster, but I mean, it's like on fucking October the 7th, Hamas are like the most objectionable people in the world. Now, I'm not going to say like, well, he did, she did, but that's basically what this whole argument is. It's like, well, let's just forget about that atrocity and let's get angry about this atrocity over here.
Atrocities are atrocities. It's why a two-state solution is needed.
Yeah, like, and Hamas, you know, the people of Gaza are not exactly enjoying a pleasant time on the most peaceful day of the week under a theocratic dictatorship of terrorists. God damn it, people, wake up and realize what the situation is. There's monsters on every side of this thing.
Yeah,
but the people in the countries, whether they are Palestinian, whether they are Israelis, are just people trying to get on with their damn lives. And ultimately, this will only ever get solved by people sitting down and talking to each other. But exactly, none of us have a right to a land. I mean, ultimately, I just don't accept that. And that's as true for the First Nations of Canada as it is for, I don't know, are we going to say, you know, only the Celts have the right to live in Britain? You know, all those Anglo-Saxons and the Vikings and the rest, they better sling the hooks back to Europe or wherever the fuck they came from. You can't do it. We've all arrived in places in the world because we just moved in without asking. Israel's not so unique in that case. Terrible things have happened in which, you know, basically the whole history of America is of people dying in their millions because of disease and massacre and genocide brought about by people immigrating. But here we are. What are we going to do? We have to live with it. We have to get on with it. And until we do that and get rid of this bullshit, fucking terrible history, we're never going to make any progress. People of the Middle East have to live together. They're there. They have to accept each other and get on with it. And one day, some, you know, and probably when the theocratic maniacs calm the hell down and accept that actually it would be nicer if we could just coexist and run a business and let our children go to school, we might all be able to live together. But until then, we're stuck with this nonsense.
But the sad thing is just watch it infecting our politics here closer to home at the municipal and provincial level, because somebody on the left wants to score points. And that's it. There's no, if you really want to solve it, go run provincial or federally, go work overseas. But until then, it's just placating your virtue points that you're trying to score with your respective constituents, and it's not helping. It doesn't help people here in Niagara region or in Hamilton Center or here in Ontario. All you're doing is you start hate, and what we heard from our previous episodes is that hate's directed towards Jews. It's being used as an excuse to go attack Jewish people and Jewish businesses here at home, because you need to make a point about how virtuous you are over something that you have no standing on. It's sickening. It's cowardly. You're not standing for anything. To stand and say both sides need to come to the table to sit down and have a conversation is far more productive.
far more productive, but right now in the current climate, to say, oh, you all need to sit down and talk together, it's going to be seen as some kind of act of treachery by the people involved in this debate. Like, no, 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 that's not good enough. We need to exterminate this country. And that's right. What they're talking about when they talk about from the river to the sea.
Yeah.
It's exterminating Israel, getting rid, and of course, they don't go as far as to say how that would happen or, you know, work out
we
those.
Know, we know how it'll details. Happen. Exactly. We know how it happens. We've seen it in the past. Let's not kid ourselves.
This whole thing crosses the line so much. It's gone far beyond, you know, a justifiable and reasonable discussed very often. Well, discussed what this Israeli government has often done, the extremes that they have gone to on many occasions. That disgust is, you know, I think entirely justifiable, and there are many, many Israelis and Jews who would totally be on board with that. But this has gone far, far beyond that now. That's not what the conversation is about anymore. It's anti-Semitism.
Okay. On that note, let's take a pause, and we'll be back with our next story right after this.
This is Charles Adler. After a few years of working on radio and television, The Charles Adler Show has evolved to a natural place in 2023. YouTube, podcast, and open RSS. You'll hear the show as it always has been delivered, concise, with context, clarity, and empathy. And as a bonus, the guests will be natural-born storytellers who won't fear telling stories that are personal and emotional. They won't fear uncomfortable questions. Most important, they won't fear me. Follow me on Twitter at Charles Adler and subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, we're back. And again, focusing more closer to our backyard and the fact that in recent news, at the federal level, it was announced that the federal government is going to start cutting back the number of foreign students coming into Canada, which means that our universities closer around us, Brock, Mac, U of T, Mississauga, and Scarborough, and York University as well, if you want to throw that into the 905, are going to see fewer and fewer foreign students coming into our schools. Now, what this means is it could pose problems for the funding models for these schools in the very immediate future. The Global News is reporting that this is really screwing up the Ford government's funding model for these schools. For the last, pretty much since Doug Ford got into power, it's been giving a lot of leeway to our post-secondary institutions, not just universities, but colleges as well, to basically bankroll their operations off of international students. International students get a far higher tuition costs because they're allowed to, and that this was going to basically bankroll their operations for a good long time, which is why you're able to keep tuitions frozen for Ontario students and whatnot, but also not actually have to fund post-secondary institutions properly. They were just going to bankroll it off of international students. As we all know, this is a problem with the housing crisis, because the more international students in, we need to put them somewhere. We have not done that. One problem has led to another, and so the federal government has said, that's it, no more, we're putting a cap on it. And that has meant that our post-secondary institutions in Ontario are now panicking. They don't know where they're going to be able to make the funding, because they can't raise tuition costs. And Doug Ford isn't saying, well, we're going to make up the middle ground.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't heard anything directly, but universities are notoriously mum on their funding.
It's very difficult to get people from universities to talk. And for good reason. They don't want to piss off the paymaster, right? Even when the paymaster's screwing them over.
And they don't want to scare off the alumni. I mean, when you have a lot of rich alumni who have taken those degrees that they've earned and gone off and made quite the name for themselves in the private sector, and they go to them constantly and say, hey, do you want to go build a new library? Do you want to go build a new lecture hall? And we'll name it after you, etc. The reason why I think it's becoming a bit of an issue, though, is out east, Queens, notoriously, Queens University, sure, some of you listening have your degrees from Queen's University, either law or an undergrad or whatever have you. But they're panicking because they're saying that they are at risk of going under, essentially, and they're proposing drastic cuts across the board for a number of programs and courses and what have you, which we didn't really cover because, again, not the 905. However, what got us was the Queen's Journal, the student-run paper, was reporting on an open house that the provost made on this matter to bring it up. And the provost had announced that they were in talks with a number of other universities and post-secondary institutions across Ontario, and that six other institutions that they did not name are reporting that they're in the same boat of this. They don't know how they're going to keep programs open or doors open, which made us perk our ears a bit. Say, is that how far gone this crisis is? Is this a huge crisis that we're going to be stuck slashing massive programs, and not the fringe ones we're talking about? We're talking like classical arts, history, political science courses.
Well, yeah, perhaps. I mean the historians again, and I'm biased here. You know, it's the arts that always take it in the nuts when this happens, which is why we end up with so many terrible historians in this province. I'll declare a conflict of interest in that my actual day job is involved in selling things to universities. So I guess I have a bit of a conflict in that when funding is short, my business doesn't make money. And it's also in the arts sector. So, you know, and I'll tell you this just for nothing as a general experience. Ontario universities and Canadian universities in general are some of the hardest universities in the world to get money out of. If you think there's waste going on, it's not in Canada. Canadian universities are very difficult to sell to because they don't have the money. and no university in the world will claim that it's got a lot of money. They all feel the struggle. Well, I mean, maybe with the exception of some universities in the US, but there's no such thing as universities that will say, oh yeah, we're loaded. Believe me, as a Canadian company trying to sell globally, but including Canada, Canada is a tough, tough sell because no one's got the money.
I can vouch for that.
And that's before this started. And Ontario, so the Ontario government basically funds Ontario universities at a level about 57% of the national average already. And when they came in, they cut a subsidy fee from the previous government, which was aimed at lower income and middle class students. And they said, oh, well, you know, this isn't necessary. Instead, we'll just cut the fees and that will have the same effect. Well, that meant that not only, you know, sure, the students are getting in for a lower fee, kind of, but the universities have just taken a massive haircut. And since then, basically since they came in, they have frozen tuition rates all through inflation, all through COVID, right, all through everything. There's been no increase in funding going to the university. So we're already half a decade behind anyway in the funding. And then when the federal government put a cap on overseas students, that's now sort of triggered the crisis. The universities for decades and decades and decades, certainly since the 90s, and this is a worldwide phenomenon as well, really rely on overseas students. I'm not quite sure what the logic was of the federal government to put what seems like a very stringent cap on overseas students. On the other hand, I don't think overseas students should be used as a cash cow to stop governments paying their way and supporting education properly. So I kind of see both sides of that argument.
Well, the federal government, and I think initially said, let's open the doors because the idea was that we're going to have these international students come in on the pretense that they're going to earn an undergraduate degree here somewhere in Canada, and then they will, you know, they've worked out the numbers, so many will stay and they will work towards citizenship, and then we'll have this economy of smart, educated new Canadians who will start businesses, go to work for us, and, you know, grow the economy. And that's because we aren't having enough babies to replace the boomer generation, and there was all this happening. And that was the general consensus for a long time. And a good number of people say that is the only way we're going to keep the economy going, ultimately, because we just the math just doesn't add up otherwise. The problem was, of course, we invited all these people in, but, oh, yeah, we forgot where we're going to put them. How are we going to house them? And the belief is that that has contributed to a lot of the housing crisis that we're seeing here, which is why the federal government said, okay, we're going to have to cap that number of people coming in. The trade-off was always that Doug Ford, in his illustrious wisdom, has done what he always does, is he thought somebody else ought to pay for it. Is basically my belief is the Doug Ford.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ethos, right? Somebody else ought to pay for this project, not the Ontario taxpayer, even though it's Ontario publicly funded universities, post-secondary education. But somebody else should pay for it. Not, God forbid, we find the billions of dollars in surplus that we're sitting on at the provincial government, maybe put some of that into post-secondary education, post-secondary funding. No, we're going to leave these foreign students, they're going to pay for it. They're going to come in and we'll just chalk up tuition, you know, 2-3 times the average Ontario tuition, and that's going to pay for the funding of these universities. Overnight, that plan has been thrown out the window by the federal government. And the question now is, how is the Ford government going to keep our institutions going? My concern is always the Queen's statement of 6 other institutions are out there that could potentially be they're on the brink of bankruptcy, is basically what they're saying. And that we don't know which ones. I don't know how true that is, but
yeah, no, I mean, I don't totally believe it. I mean, and I mean, I've heard the reports that the finances, say McMaster, are not particularly spectacular. Laurentian in Sudbury declared bankruptcy, or basically asked for bankruptcy protection,
right,
years ago. The universities were encouraged. I mean, I'm going to throw a little bit more shade at the federal government here, because yeah, I'll criticize the provincial government all day and all night for underfunding universities. I think the federal government was naive. If it's like, we've got a housing problem, let's solve that by putting this sudden out of the blue cap on overseas students. University, I mean, that has been a major funding stream, right, for universities for a very long time. You can't just switch that off. You right. can't. If there are housing problems caused by foreign students, then you need to find other solutions other than just turning off the stream. That's ridiculous. I'm going to say that's a dumb move, unless someone can tell me otherwise.
Well, it strikes me as very panicked.
Yeah, I mean, and the housing, that's, you know, God, we've talked about how the housing situation enough on this podcast. We know it goes far, far beyond any of that. I mean, yeah, sure, that's a contributing factor, but that's not getting at the root of the housing problem, right, if you just suddenly get rid of a bunch of students. And we're encouraging immigration anyway, and don't we want, if you want immigration, aren't the immigrants that we want the highly educated ones who've been through Canadian universities for 3 or 4 years?
Right.
For God's sake, how short-sighted is that? You can't ask for immigration on one side, which they absolutely are, and then turn off the supply of educated immigrants in another place. It makes absolutely no sense. So yeah, federal government, I think that's dumb. However, absolutely, the provincial government is making a bad situation worse, because it's not willing to pay for anything. And the idea, I mean, the minister, whose name is, let me just remind myself, Jill Dunlop, saying, like, well, you know, the universities just need to find, you know, $4 or $5 billion worth of efficiencies, which, you know, we're going to do. That's so, you know, when any government, particularly conservative governments, talk about efficiencies, is always such utter bullshit.
I want this government to explain to me what is an efficiency. I want them to tell me what that is, because I have a feeling that they think it's like this magical, you know, thing that's, we'll go to the efficiency closet and we'll just drag out $5 billion of them and that's going to solve our problems. Like, here's the thing, that the belief of, I think we're coming to the realization that the philosophy of, oh, government is full of waste, is a fallacy. It's a made up myth, because Lord knows, this is going to prove it. Like, there's no way our universities operated at so much bloat and waste for so long. It's just not the way that our system works.
And it's been proven time and time again in country after country, after nation after nation, after province, governments that come in talking about efficiency, they never find it. They never find it. Tax burden will go up under conservative governments as it goes up under other governments. Finding efficiencies tends to, what it ends up doing is it cuts services and the people who maybe you could afford to lose are the ones who are making the decisions about where the funding goes. So those guys never lose their jobs. It doesn't work. There is not a massive amount of waste in any of the systems. And the waste that is there is really, really difficult to get.
I'm going to go on a limb here and say that, not really a limb, I'll stand by this. The one area I would argue that a government should invest in, there are a lot of areas you can say, transportation, highways, whatever. I'm going to always argue education is by far the best investment any government, especially the provincial government, can make. Not just education in terms of our elementary and high school, but also post-secondary. And that's not just universities. I'm talking colleges, trade schools, et cetera. Investing in that to say, you know what? If you're the NDP or the Liberals listening, this might be a good policy point. Find a way to say the first degree is on us. Your first bet run through undergraduate. Now, whether that's your university bachelor's of whatever, or if you're going to trades, you say, I want to work towards an apprenticeship in a trade. All of that should be, the first round is on us. Anything after that, if you want to go back and you want to get further certifications, or if you want to get a master's or, you know, a PhD grad school level, then okay, that's when you need to go find a way to pay for it yourself. And that's either through grants, loans, whatever. But I'm of the mindset in this day and age, education is the key to our future. Investing in our schools so that our kids have the best technology, and investing in our post-secondary so that maybe we can make it so the first undergraduate degree is on us, that we do not have to worry about that much debt coming out of university. But our workforce is educated, they are future-proofed, if you will, and they don't have massive debt that saddle them from getting into the economy and producing stuff.
Oh yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, I agree on all the points in the if you want to be competitive in the modern economy, you've got to be well educated. The countries that have the best education systems, that educate the best, prosper the most. And there are countries around the world that have done exactly that, of just funding. You know, why we pay for schools, right? Admittedly, this government would happily have us all paying for schools as well, or would let the middle class or the wealthy opt out. But I think most of us believe that education should be free. And education, why should we suddenly have an arbitrary cutoff at 17 or 18, where suddenly you have to start paying or taking loans or whatever? No, it should be free. You should be able to go to university and not have to. It should be free. I was the last generation in Britain that came in at the very tail end of that system as Margaret Thatcher abolished it, of You went, you got a grant, you got your living expenses, you got your fees, you got the whole thing, and then you left and you got a job, and there was no debt, no nothing.
Scandinavian countries have that system essentially. I don't know how they pay for it, but I mean,
they have high taxes. They have high taxes, and like the high taxes mean they have an excellent standard of living and a healthy, well-educated population.
Sweden and Denmark are, Finland as well, I throw that in there, are notoriously for being wonderful countries to live in, to work, live, raise a family in. I don't see why we would not want to emulate that system here in Ontario and Canada as well. I'm a firm believer in education. I really do, because we don't know. None of us predict, like, this thing that we're doing now, this podcasting thing. Well, 20 years ago, I never would have thought that this was even conceivable as a practice, let alone a habitual thing. I could never figure out how would this work. Yet it's here. There's billions of podcasts around the world. We don't know what technology is going to come down the road. And the idea of saying, well, that's just ridiculous. That's, you know, the AI. We don't know what AI is going to do. We just don't. You could talk, oh, it's ridiculous, Terminator, you know, science fiction or not. Here's the thing. We don't know what's going to happen. I don't, it could be the downfall of all of us. It could be the thing that will lift us up into heights never before dreamed. I don't know. But here's the thing. My kids and my kids' kids are going to be the ones dealing with the consequences. They need to be educated with how do we deal with these things. And cutting back on education now and saying, here's the thing. Doug Ford never finished college. It was too tough for him. And I think he's intimidated by people who have degrees, who have postgrad, you know, PhDs, who are educated on this stuff. He's intimidated by them, and therefore it's easy to say, well, I don't want more of those people around. I want those working class salt of the earth folks who are like me, are scared of higher education. And we can't be. We have to embrace it. And that's, I'm not saying this as some kind of elitist, you know, only PhDs, but we have to be willing to say those who get into the trades, we have to give them the tools to say, you've got to be able to adapt to new technologies, new tools, new ways of building things, new materials. You have to be willing to be able to be educated on it, because saying you're on your own isn't good enough. We need to give people the tools and the ability to educate themselves on this stuff, so that the stuff that we never dreamed of in the future is what they're going to be able to train and retrain on.
And the terrifying thing is now that, and to be completely frank and honest, Ontario doesn't have a top flight university, even as we are right now. Toronto is close. Toronto's getting close to the kind of university that has some kind of worldwide reputation. Maybe Waterloo in some subjects. But in all honesty, Ontario's universities are not top flight. They're B tier universities.
Right.
If you want to be, you know, if you're the brightest and smartest in Ontario, and you really want to get on in the world of academia or top flight research, what's the first thing you're going to do is buy a plane ticket somewhere else. You're going to go to the States. You're going to go to Harvard. You're going to go to Yale. You're going to go to Oxford or Cambridge.
Yep.
These days, you might well go to China, because Chinese universities got plenty of money, and they're doing, you know, they, you know, the days when we just assumed that whatever the hell's going on in China, it's not going to be very good. No, they're doing top flight research and they've got the money to spend. Mm-hmm. We're not competing. And fine, Canada's not the world's biggest country. It's tough to have one of those universities that everybody mentions in that first breath of like the world's top universities. I'm not saying that that's easy. And I'm not denigrating Ontario's universities either. I mean, the U of T's of this world, very good. Canada has a couple of universities that are right up there, but we should be aiming for better. Not for, well, let's just hope that they get by on the pittance that we're giving them. No, we're not going to compete. We're going to be turning out. And you know, it's just a classic brain drain. Best people, and they don't come back. They go and work in other countries, and they contribute to other countries, and they earn money for other countries.
Right.
It's so stupid.
It's just short-sighted, and it's going to come back. We still have 2 years to go before the next provincial election. I am hoping that the talk of six universities all bordering on bankruptcy right now is overblown. Because my God, if we had in the next few years, we have any university, any declaring bankruptcy and shutting their doors, that itself should be a cause to turf Ford out of power, because we can't afford. This isn't a nice to have, folks. This is essential. This is like, we got to think of a world. Our universities are like shutting down the 401. We would never, and I don't mean for repair. I mean, just we take the 401 and we say, nope, can never use it again. Bulldoze it. That's what shutting down a university should be like. We should compare it to that. And that's we can't, it just cannot happen because we don't want to fund it. If we don't fund it, we lose it. There's no coming back. I'm going to leave it at that for that story. Last story that we wanted to talk upon. Very close to home, Milton. Milton MPP, provincial conservative candidate, Parm Gill, has announced that he is jumping ship to the federal conservatives, and he'll be running as an MP, or running to be the MP for Milton there. Now, that means that there's going to be a by-election eventually, presumably in 6 months' time here in the 905. We talked about this before we hit record. You and I are of the same mind. Bonnie Crombie has got to run for that seat because we think she'll win it. There's a strong liberal vote in Milton. Milton has the idea of having a leader in their as their MPP, I think they'll very much go for it.
Yeah, and correct me if I'm wrong. Like, so Parm Gill's decided to run against Vancouverden.
Yes.
Well, they really think they're going to win, don't they?
Well, we'll discuss that, I guess.
That's another issue. That's a separate issue.
Another issue, but I'm more concerned with, you know, if the liberals, if Bonnie Crombie does not declare she's running for that seat,
this is a gift. She couldn't ask for a better seat. I mean, other than maybe in Mississauga, that by-election came up in Mississauga. Yeah. Other than that, this is the best possible seat to come up for Bonnie Crombie to run for. It was a liberal seat before. It was a liberal seat. I'm trying to remember who held it. Oh my God, I can't believe I'm blanking on name. Indira Naidoo Harris. Yeah.
You had it.
Someone who was a friend back in the day. Sorry, Indira. Indira Naidoo Harris was the MPP. It's been a liberal seat. It's highly, highly winnable. It's just on the border with Mississauga. It's pretty damn close.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to run. You've got to get your ass into the house. You know, this idea that you swan around on a bus and you make friends for six months is no. You're the government in waiting. If you want to form government, you got to behave like the government in waiting, not like a fundraising organization or like a pressure group.
Right.
You've got to behave like the premier, and the best way to behave like the premier is to be where the premier is, which is in the house, and taking that moron to task every day.
I would argue the liberals have got to prove, Bonnie Crombie has to prove to Ontario that she's winnable, that she's a winnable choice, and you don't do that by backing down from a fight. I'm sorry, but it's politics. You gotta pick fights and you gotta win. This is a winnable fight for her, I think. And if she decides,
if she can't win that seat, she's no business being leader.
You're absolutely right. If she loses it,
and she can't, then, doesn't think she can win that seat, she's got no business being leader. If she doesn't look at that and go easy, right. Let's go. She's an idiot and be no business being leader.
She should be declaring tomorrow, I'm the candidate in Milton. Yeah. And because here's the thing, if I was Bonnie Crombie, and Bonnie, if you're listening, this is what I'm telling you should do. Declare tomorrow you're the candidate in Milton, the Liberal candidate in Milton, and start a countdown of how many days it's been since Doug Ford has not called a by-election. Yes, we know he's going to wait 6 months to call it, but you call him out as a chicken, as a coward, as somebody who does not want to meet you on the battlefields of politics, and to say you're ready to run, you're ready to serve the good people of not only Milton but all of Ontario, and you put it back on Dougie Boy to say, call the by-election. Like, are you that scared of facing me in the legislature? And because we know she'll win. We know she'll win. And here's the thing.
I don't know she'll win because I don't have a huge amount of faith in Bonnie Crombie, if I'm totally honest. I'm not excited. Nothing that she's done has ever excited me. However, she should win, and she should think she can win every day. So do it. It gets headlines. This is free. This is gets you the kind of headlines that are very difficult to get outside of a writ period. Thing.
You run, you win, because everybody's going to pay attention to what you have to say for 30 days or 27 days, for how long the writ's going to be. You win, you go to Queen's Park, you have a few victory laps of, hey, the Liberals have a leader. And then, you don't have to hang out at Queen's Park. That's the fun thing, is now you can take your seat and you can run around the province and you can build up support there. Like the idea of I have to be in the House. No, you don't. That's the thing. The conservatives cannot say, oh, well, where's Bonnie been? Say, well, where's Doug? Doug doesn't show up to work. Isn't that the pot calling the kettle black? Instead, I'm taking the government and I'm going around the government, around the province. I'm hearing what Ontarians have to say about how much you screwed them over for the last 6 years. And then when he says, when you show up to work and you start hammering with questions. It's a perfect opportunity. And I just say, look at the last Liberal leader, Stephen Del Duca, said, I'm not going to win a seat. I'm going to run in Vaughan because that's where I'm from. That's my seat. And I'm going to serve the people of Vaughan and I'll wait.
And let's just remind ourselves that he couldn't even win in Vaughan. That's how bad of a leader he was.
The reason why he didn't win in Vaughan is because he didn't win. He passed over all these other by-election opportunities that came up. He could have ran in any number of by-elections. He passed it over because he said, no, I want the best person for that seat to win. And when the time came for him to win, I know everybody says, oh, it's the pandemic. He wasn't really, like, nobody cared what he had to say because he passed over every opportunity to stand at the microphone. When
the last event, the last Liberal event I went to as a Liberal member was the leadership convention where Stephen Del Duca became leader. Now, it wasn't necessarily, those two events, me leaving and doing this, and me leaving weren't necessarily directly correlated, but it sure as hell made it a lot easier. It was like I could see the disaster coming. It was a horrible event to attend, to see people piling in behind this man who, but basically, again, Bonnie Crombie has won on the same logic. We're too far left. We need to be more like Doug Ford. I'm sorry. I don't get the math. I don't get the argument. The NDP are the problem here for the Liberals. The PCs are just there. They're always there.
Yeah.
The problem is that is whether the NDP are taking your voters or not. The NDP currently, under Merritt Stiles, are doing everything in their power to give you a gift horse back to being at least the official opposition, if not the actual government. Doug Ford currently is doing everything in his power to make it easy for you. Go win a by-election. Kick the government's ass. Humiliate them in Milton. Get your ass back to the legislature, which is what the job is. That's what you're supposed to do if you're a politician. I suspect, had inklings that that's not necessarily an automatic decision by the party. It should be. It really, really should be.
It's got to be. Here's the thing. You're what they have seven members in the legislature. Mm-hmm. You don't have the option to pick and choose who does what. Like, you need every seat there. This is a surefire win. And it should be for Bonnie, because then you have a constant microphone. Nobody's going to care if you pass over this opportunity to win a surefire bet, and you think, well, I'm going to go and I'm going to talk to people instead. I'm going to go travel the province and I'm going to go to the barbecue circuit and I'm going to go talk to the chambers of commerce around the province. No, you're not, because they're going to say, why do we care what you have to say? You had this one opportunity to get the job and you passed it up. So why do I care what you have to say now? Everything in politics is a job interview, and you got to show up to it every damn day. To pass this over, because you say, well, that doesn't really matter. Nobody cares. Yeah, nobody cares, but they do care that you didn't show up. And that's what you don't need going into the next 2 years, is the idea that You just didn't show up when we needed you most. Nobody cares what you say. Nobody cares what you do, granted. But the fact that if you don't show up, people are going to say, well, you're just another Steven Del Duca. And why am I going to go run? Why am I going to come out of the woodwork and say, I'm going to put my name on the ballot to run as a liberal in the next provincial election, whenever that is, when you yourself can't show up to lead?
Well, this is the first test for Crombie of judgment. Yeah, the job is to be a politician and to run the province. If you're not climbing over everything to actually get into the legislature as soon as you can, you're an idiot. I know that this seems to have been a logic that has come from that we've seen from the Liberals and we've seen maybe in other places, but you know. Yeah, maybe you lose, but I mean, my God, if you do lose, you're in deep trouble anyway. Like, you
know. Then the Liberals made the wrong choice.
But they really shouldn't. I don't think you'll lose. I think you'll win. I mean, Bonnie Crombie, whatever I personally think, does have a profile that nobody else has, or very few other Ontario Liberals have. She is well known. She's very well known in that part of Ontario in particular. It's like, I'm trying to remember, what was Bonnie Crombie's seat originally? What was her?
Mississauga Streetsville.
Okay. Well, you know, we're just down the road, really. It's not Mississauga, it's not Peel anymore, it's Halton, but really, you know, we're talking a couple of miles.
Not even that. It's a 5-minute drive.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 5-minute drive from that riding. In fact, I would dare say it might actually be next door. But
she has to run. If she doesn't she's an idiot.
I think so.
Like it's an absolute gift. Palm Gill couldn't have done a bigger favor to the Liberals. It does say, I'm just reading the quotes from the CBC here of the Ontario Liberal Party spokesperson's, you know, coming out with the most boring quote that comes from every political party when someone resigns. It's clearly another sign that Ford's team is abandoning a sinking ship.
Right.
I remember the PC saying that about the Liberals just about 6 months before they won another majority. every time someone stood down. But, I mean, it does say something that he basically sees it as an easier task and a more rewarding task to go after, a very prominent, well-known federal MP. Rather than going for re-election, it does say something.
I think if Bonnie Crombie wants to stand out and apart from Doug Ford, declare your intention to run, like toot sweet tomorrow, Monday, whenever, and just start baiting Doug Ford to call the by-election.
Yeah, make this a rallying call. Like, hey, you crap, corrupt piece of shit.
Yeah,
you chicken. Call the by-election, call the by-election every day. Why isn't the by-election called? You're absolutely right.
You've been throwing shade, if Bonnie Crombie saying Doug Ford, you've been throwing shade at me, you've been hitting me with tack ads. Here's the thing, face me head on.
Yeah.
Send out your punk to Milton, let's go do this, and let's face it, let's face down. You want to talk shop anytime, any week, I'm going to run in Milton. And it shuts him down. Like that's the thing. Like he has no retort to that. Then he listens because then he's like, "Well, I'm going to wait till 6 months." And you just have a clock going on a website, Milton clock countdown, and how many days have gone by without calling a by election? You call him out, and you be a thorn in his side.
You embarrass them every day. I mean, this is an absolute gift, absolutely. Absolute gift. If you want, for media attention, the whole thing, because like. Why? What reason is there for not calling a by-election? What possible reason, other than that you're chicken? You know.
Yeah. The people of Milton need representation. Let's do this. All right, that's it for this week, folks. Thanks very much for listening. We'll be back in another week's time with more 905 news, fun issues, rants, all that good stuff. Take care. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
That's it for this episode of the 905er. Thank you for listening. As always, you can send us your feedback, thoughts, and concerns, or ideas for future episodes to our email, info@905er.ca. We'd love to hear from you.
You can help us keep the 905er going by financially supporting us through Patreon as well as PayPal. Visit us at 905er.ca and click on the support tab. As well, links are in the show notes for your convenience. Lastly, you can find us on social media. Search for the_905er on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. So long for now. See you next time.
I'm Matt Kundel, host of the Sound Off Podcast, the show about podcast and broadcast. Since 2016, we've been speaking with amazing people who have populated your ears for decades. Legendary broadcasters, research wizards, talent experts, podcasters, voice talent, almost 400 stories, all for free. Subscribe or follow the Sound Off Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or at soundoffpodcast.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.